Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at Graymere Church of Christ.
I can have confidence in the tech man, and so, but this is my security blanket. I trust Jonathan. I don't know your tech man, but I will try to navigate this myself. As I said, Denise and I love Jonathan and Hema, and they're kindred spirits of ours, and it was just a joy to have him at Cordova, both of them. And they helped us translate. Cordova congregation oversees the Fishing for Men ministry, and Jonathan and Hema help us translate that material into Spanish. And so that was a tremendous help to us and a big burden on them. And so I don't know that he got that counseling free. And there was maybe some cost to it. But it's a joy always to be with Jonathan. I did mission work right out of school in southern Georgia. And I was a young preacher, probably had as good a grasp of Bible knowledge then as I ever have. But folks thought I knew how to counsel. I was a preacher. And so people of all ages came to me seeking counsel. And that really frightened me. I had a good working knowledge of the Bible. My mother read the Scriptures to me. My first memories are hearing the Scriptures. And so I think I had a good working knowledge of the Scriptures, but I had very little life experience. And so it was difficult for me to get those people where they were, from where they were to where they needed to be. I was so afraid I was going to damage somebody. And I was going to push him over the edge, because sometimes people can be so emotionally distraught, it can be dangerous. You start quoting Scriptures to them in the context when they already feel helpless and hopeless. And so the Scriptures have the answers. But sometimes you have to be compassionate, and you have to put your arm around folks and walk with them until they get coherent enough to understand the Scriptures. So I went back to school not because I necessarily wanted to get degrees, but I wanted to help people. And once you learn how to help people, then folks seek you out. And so you find yourself doing more and more of that. And so last year I resigned from full-time pulpit work, and I teach at the School of Preaching and those other areas that Jonathan talked about, and try to emphasize the counseling side of it. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. The specific assignment deals with wrestling with worry. But I've entitled that Causes and Cures of Anxiety and Depression, because that's what we, our world calls it. And so we want to kind of use that terminology, because if you've wrestled with these things, that's the terminology you use. All of us probably have worried about something. And the technical definition of worry would be anxiety, and we'll define what anxiety is as we go along here. And so if we are the kind of folks we ought to be, then we'll try to learn as much about as many things as we can. You're a large enough congregation, you probably have professional folks in every field. Use them. And don't feel guilty about using them, but make sure that we understand that the template for our behavior in life is the Scriptures. I've been forced to read hundreds of books. It takes me a long time to read and to formulate my understanding of those books, and so it was a laborious thing to me. But in all those books, and without exception, I want you to listen carefully, without exception, in every one of those books, everything that works is a Bible principle. Now, the person who authored the book may not know it. They may have learned it through trial and error. But if the principle works, it's a Bible principle. And so we're going to talk about that tonight in reference to dealing with the causes and cures of anxiety and depression. I may have to trust your tech man, because I'm not doing too well. But anxiety is this apprehension that we feel. We call it worry sometimes, this apprehension of uneasiness. And usually that's because there's something pending. There's an impending thing that looms over us that causes us to anticipate some kind of threat or danger. When you process your experience in life, all of us have been anxious. Sometimes being anxious is a good thing. I played football in high school, and I was always anxious about preparation for the team we were playing the next week. There's a certain amount of worry. So there can be a healthy, because that makes you prepare, that makes you concentrate, that makes you understand in order to face fear and impending threats, there may be something you can do about it. It becomes dangerous and becomes unhealthy when it cripples us and we do nothing about it. We don't respond to it. But that's what anxiety really is. And it causes us a lot of stress on occasion. And it's really because of some stimuli in our environment. Something has our attention, and something maybe we don't feel like we can master, or maybe something that has mastered us before. And when we see it coming again, or we experience it again, we become anxious. Or it may be internal. I have test anxiety, and I've been forced to take lots of tests. And it all started, I can remember when my anxiety started. All the way back in elementary school, when you'd have to do those school-wide tests. And maybe just the way they created the environment, we'd go in the cafeteria, and they had this clock they would wind up. And they'd give you number two pencils, and they'd give you these booklets. And they'd say, you've got so many minutes to finish this section. And I could hear the clock ticking. And that put pressure on me. I really probably could have done well on all the tests if I just hadn't created that environment. But when you come in there and you start winding up a clock and you sit it down there on that old table and it starts ticking and you've only got a certain amount of time to get through a certain section, you see other people turning pages faster than you do, it crippled me all my life. Even when I was in college, someone say, exam, I would feel that anxiety. Now, I did learn as I grew, matured, that I could make preparation for those exams. But that was an internal stimuli from past experience, and it cost me anxiety. And all of us have experienced that, no doubt, in some way. But you know, sometimes that turns into depression. And depression isn't always caused because it's something we worry about, but depression is something that cripples a lot of folks' lives, and it is a dejection that we feel. When we experience things in life and we become despondent, we're crippled to the point that we really don't see hope in addressing whatever the issue is. If we were honest, all of us would have to admit that there are occasions when we've been depressed at different levels, maybe than other folks, but all of us maybe have faced situations where we thought, you know, I'm not going to make it this time. Maybe we had goals set and said, you know, people keep making decisions that offset the things that I've done, and so it's just not going to work out. I'm not going to be happy the way I thought I was going to be happy. I'm not going to have what I thought I was going to have. And that's often accompanied by feelings of hopelessness. And when a person becomes hopeless, they then no longer are motivated to respond. Everywhere I go and I deal with this subject, invariably, people will say, you know, you don't hear that being dealt with from the pulpit much. And then they begin to tell me things that I resemble. They begin to tell me about some sermons that they've heard about depression from the standpoint of being scolded about being depressed, that they ought to be, as Christians, they ought never be depressed. And I thought back through my sermon, did I leave that impression? Was I that shallow, maybe that calloused at times where I just said, look, if you're a real Christian, you're going to trust God and you're never going to have moments of depression. Did I really come across that way? Even when I've experienced in my life times when life was so cruel, the tragedy was so unthinkable. Life changed so drastically and so quickly that I felt numb. I lost all motivation. Things that were exciting to me yesterday really had no meaning today. Did I call someone who heard me speak to leave that assembly more hopeless than when they came in? And so it made me do some soul searching and saying, you know, you ought to tell folks the Bible has the answers. You ought to tell folks that Christians ought to be confident and ought to be happy. But you need to be realistic, because that same Bible tells us about great people who faced some things in life that they were not really prepared for. In a biblical sense, and we gave the definitions from a technical standpoint of what anxiety and what depression is and what causes them, and so all of us can relate to those. That's where we are and that's what we experience. But if we were real about it, we go to the Scriptures, one of the most powerful Bible characters that we just are in awe of when you read about His strength in the Lord and His ability to speak and to face danger. And we have this prophet Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 18 standing on Mount Carmel and facing all the prophets of Baal in that gigantic experience where it comes down to, let's see if Baal is real or let's see if God is real. And that's kind of our life experience, isn't it? We begin to struggle with choices in life. It kind of comes down to, is God true and real, or are these other things true and real? And so that's one of the most triumphant chapters in the Scriptures. And Elijah's extremely confident in God. So much so that he chides these prophets of Baal and said, you go first. You call on your God and then I'll call on my God. And when they build that altar and they put the wood on the altar and then they put the sacrifices on the altar, he said, call on your God, and when they're calling on their God, you know, maybe He doesn't hear you, maybe He's hard of hearing, and maybe He's gone on vacation, and He really chides those folks. And then when they get through pleading, and they cut themselves, and they're bleeding, and no response from Baal, this confident prophet says, dig a trench around that altar and fill it with water, and this is during a time of drought. You don't want to waste water. He pours the water around the altar, and he calls upon his God to send fire. And immediately the fire is sent. The sacrifice is consumed. The wood is burned. The altar is consumed. The water is lapped up. And we're excited. Every time I read it, and I've heard that story all my life, every time I read it, it inspires me. I'm excited about this great man. But you turn a page in that man's life, a real short page, just a few verses, and this old wicked Queen Jezebel gets word back from King Ahab what Elijah did to those prophets. And she said to her servants, you take this message to that prophet and you tell him, my gods do so to me if you're not dead by the end of the day. His whole world changed. His whole concept changed. He goes from this mountaintop experience of confidence in God to the valley of despair and hopelessness. And that's what 1 Kings chapter 19 describes to us. You see, when I've been forced to read those books for my counseling degrees, when you deal with depression, clinical depression, and it boils down to three things. People lose their focus. People get fatigued, and people don't receive the right nourishment. And so to address those things, you have to make sure that you get them focused on real life experiences again. And you have to make sure that those folks have some rest. And you have to make sure they receive the right nourishment. And so the Bible does have the answer for our issues, but the part we leave out is we have issues. And we, as servants of God, as powerful servants of God, can sometimes be discouraged. And sometimes can be over-anxious. And can sometimes become depressed. If you were to take a Bible picture of what clinical depression looks like, it would be 1 Kings chapter 19. Because when you read verse 4, this man, this great prophet, takes this journey into a desert place, goes under a juniper tree, and he says, let me die. Now, when you saw him focused on Mount Carmel, he knew who God was. He knew what God was going to do. He knew Baal wasn't real. He knew 450 prophets of Baal could not make him real. He was extremely confident. But not now. And sometimes when we see our brothers and sisters who struggle with depression, we give up on them. Or we label them as weak, spiritually speaking. We might ought to pay attention to what the Bible reveals to us about this man. You see, he lost his focus. He was no longer focused on the God who sent down that fire and consumed that altar. He could have called on that God and said, "Did you hear what Jezebel said? I trust in you, and if my life is taken, I trust you to take care of my soul." He could have done that. He had done that in the past, but he's not doing that now. You see, when we lose focus, then life just no longer has meaning. There's a lack of meaning of life. He had meaning to life before, didn't he? Let's prove these prophets of Baal wrong, and let's prove God true. He doesn't have meaning now. He says, "Just let me die." But God tells me and you what to do in that reference. He didn't let him die, did he? He didn't let him stay in that desert place, and he didn't leave him alone. You see, when we lose focus, we also have a lack of motivation for life. Now, he had a motivation before. These prophets are not going on that mountain, and they're not going to pretend like Baal is true, and they're not going to chide my God. We're going to prove once and for all to all the nation of Israel and everybody who's watching who is a citizen worshiper of Baal is going to know who the true God is. But when he lost his focus, he no longer has motivation for life. And in the third place, there is a stark contrast in this man's experience, and there is a lack of mastery of life. Why wasn't he scared of Ahab and Jezebel on the mountain? He was already king. She was already a wicked queen. They'd already killed the prophets. In fact, when he begins to have a conversation with God, he reminds God that they killed the prophets. And so he knew these were mean people already. Why wouldn't he discourage then? The context had changed. Now he's lost his focus. Maybe it was because he rode in that chariot from the mountain. Maybe he was fatigued, and maybe a lot of things like we do in life. Sometimes we overextend ourselves, and sometimes we become distracted, and sometimes we lose our focus. Sometimes I lose my focus. Do you? Sometimes I lose my focus. And I have to clear my mind, and I have surrounded myself with Christian people who know who I am and what I'd like to accomplish in life. And they won't let me give up. And I owe that same thing to my brothers and sisters in Christ and just refuse to let them give up. You see, not only lost his focus, and that becomes the clinical observation of this man's depression. Loss of focus. That's what you're reading in all the textbook. People just lose focus. And so he lost focus. And then there's that life fatigue. Some of these pictures are so graphic, aren't they? I don't know if they show up on the screen like they should. But this man just looks broken, like he's just so burdened down with life that he's fragile and about to break. That was Elijah. When you hear his conversation with God, he says, "I'm the only one left. There's not anybody else who serves you. They've already killed the prophets, the other prophets. My fathers are no longer alive." It's a bleak, bleak circumstance. I am all by myself. When we feel all alone in life, the burden is great, isn't it? We think, nobody else to help me. I don't want to burden anybody else with this, and so I have to do it myself. Life fatigue sets in. Part of his problem was he'd gone a journey without it being under God's direction. He'd gone a day's journey. Have you ever gone a day's journey without God telling you to go there? Without doing what He wants you to do in the way that you know He wants you to do it? Then you just get emotionally fatigued. And you're trying to work out an issue, a problem, and it finally just dawns on you, why am I trying to do this without God? And that's what happens to us when we get depressed. We lose our focus and we become fatigued because we wrestle with things, and that's what your emphasis is. And your title is all about wrestling with worry. What happens when you wrestle something? Whether it's a child, whether it's a combative opponent, whether it's somebody across the line on the football field, when you wrestle with someone, what happens? You're fatigued. Well, here's a man who's wrestling with this overwhelming threat, this impending danger, this evil woman that he knows will be torturous, vicious, relentless in what she'll do to him. Cause him to lose his focus. And he has worked so hard for God, and he'll tell God, I've worked for you, I've served you, and I'm the only one serving you. In this whole nation, I'm the only one. So why don't you just let me die and let's get it over with? But you see, he had gone that journey without the Lord, and now he's fatigued. Sometimes that happens to us. It happens to us when we have losses. It might be a loss of job. It might be loss of health. It might be loss of friends. It might be a lot of things, but losses burden us down. Sometimes we lose the context of life that we once had, that we thought we'd always have. Sometimes friends betray us and the hurt is just so deep, so unthinkable, so unexpected, that we lose our focus and we can't sleep. We think about it and rehearse, did I do something wrong? Should I have done something different? And we just become fatigued with it. Sometimes life demands. Sometimes we have conversations with God the way Elijah did. I say we. Sometimes I have conversations with God the way Elijah did. Lord, I'm serving you. I've given my life to you. Everything in my life is to accomplish your will and to help others. Explain to me why this is happening. I see other people who are not serving you. They're not accomplishing your will. They don't give you a thought any day of their life. They don't have these issues. They've not lost their loved ones. They've not had to move. They don't have a change of context. And that demand of life can be so overwhelming that we lose focus. That was true with Elijah. You know what he does? He goes and he stays under that juniper tree for a while and then he finds a cave to go in. And when you're dealing with depression, the first thing you have to do as a professional is to make sure you get them out of the cave. You get them out of the bedroom. You don't let them pull the shades and close the doors and shut people out. And so when you have God dealing with Elijah, he takes him where he is. And he gets him where he needs to be. He goes to where Elijah is and he says, what are you doing here? We shouldn't be opposed to doing that with our loved ones. You know what happens when we see people who are depressed? And I'm saying we in a general sense. I'm not saying you specifically. You know what we usually do in the church? We avoid them. We don't know what to say. Say, well, you know, they haven't been here in weeks. You know, I would go by there, but it's kind of awkward. And, you know, the husband said she really doesn't want to see visitors. And, you know, or the wife said, you know, he'll finally get out of it. And we just kind of leave them alone. Now, if we want to know how the Bible tells us to deal with it, you don't leave them alone, do you? Now, the Bible doesn't have the answer, but it involves us. Now, God goes to this man. He doesn't leave him alone. He sends the angel to him and he says, taps him on the shoulder. He wakes him up. Because you know why? He's asleep. You know what happens to people who are depressed? They want to pull the covers up. They want to sleep. Just leave me alone. Maybe this will go away. You know what happens when we do that? Depression grows. It multiplies. It gets bigger. The hole gets deeper. The environment gets darker. The angel provides food for him to eat. And that's the third thing necessary. Must have nourishment. Sometimes you look at someone, they look healthy. But you look in their eyes, they don't look happy. And you think, you know, they've got everything to be happy about. They've got a good husband, they've got kids, you know, they've got their wife, they've got friends at church, and we began to assess things, and why would they be unhappy? Sometimes these things are caused by chemical imbalance. Sometimes our body just doesn't produce it. Kind of like a diabetic's body doesn't produce insulin. And sometimes the only way you're going to get that chemical balance is for medication. Now, I know the extremes. I'm fully aware of the extremes. I deal with the extremes all the time. And that is those who absolutely refuse to take any kind of medication because they think it's a spiritual failure to do so. And I try to use that illustration about a diabetic. They're not going to live if they don't have the insulin. And their body is not going to produce it. So you're going to have something to bring about that balance or you're not going to live. And someone whose body doesn't produce the right chemicals, and I'm talking about it's hereditary or something's happened to them or it's a change of life and there's an upset in that chemical balance. Sometimes they have to have medication to do that. And some people just absolutely refuse to do it. That's an extreme. There are other folks that don't think they could face life without medication. That's the other extreme. And so they never really change anything they could change, and they don't address the issue that they could address, and they don't get the right kind of diet, they don't get the right kind of exercise, and they don't eat the right kind of food, and they don't focus on the things they need to focus on, and they don't balance their lives so they're not fatigued. They don't address those issues. They just want to medicate themselves not to feel anything. Those are the two extremes. But Christians have to live with balance in their life in every aspect. If your body doesn't produce it, you're going to have it in some fashion. In most cases, and I'm talking in general terms, in most cases, we can help that balance by making sure we eat nutritional food. I think it's interesting that we pay good money for books that are useful in the medical and psychological field that talk about these issues. And they'll lay it out just like this. But we miss the stories in the Bible. When God goes and addresses this man who's wrestling with worry and anxiety and depression, He wakes him up and He said, "Here's food to eat." Now, members of the Lord's church can do that. We can prepare food, can't we? We just have to learn what kind of food to prepare for someone who needs the right kind of nourishment. Do you suppose God knew what kind of food to prepare Elijah? You suppose He put just the right ingredients in that food to give him what he needed? Interestingly, when you read the story and you see that this man faces the issue, this lack of food, God recognizes it and God gives us a template to follow about how to handle depression and how to deal with anxiety and how to overcome worry. And He said, "Here's what you're going to do. You're going to eat." Well, he eats, but you know what he does? He goes into the cave, goes back to sleep. He goes and wakes him up again. And he said, "You've got to eat." Now see, people have come pay me money to tell them that. But God's told us that. As brothers and sisters in Christ, we can have an understanding of how to deal with some of these matters. Now, we're not all professionals. And so I wouldn't try to give you medical advice because I'm not trained in the field. I can't write prescriptions, and so I can't tell you what medication to take, but I can help you do your part to get focused, to balance your life so you're not fatigued, and to help you with your diet. We can learn to do that as brothers and sisters in Christ. We can have that knowledge rather than say, "Boy, I don't know. They said they're depressed, and so all I know is just stay away from them, you know? You know, about every few months, they kind of get in one of those funks, and so maybe that's just the way they're going to always be." And there may be some of that always in our lives. But if we have understanding of each other, and we encourage each other, and we do what God demonstrated for us to do and say, "Not going to leave you alone. You drew a short straw. You have a spiritual family that cares about you. We are not going away. You've got to get up. Here's food for you to eat." Well, he finally wakes up. He eats the food good enough to sustain him 40 days of energy. Something was in that food, wasn't it? You know, we need protein in our diet and we need something that will energize us, and Twinkie's just not going to do it. If I eat sweets, guess what? I will get depressed if that's what I eat all the time. I get up for a little while and then, boy, I hit a wall. Not good for me. I like sweets, but I can't live off of sweets. And so whatever food God provided for him, it energized him for 40 days. You're talking about an energy food. It did it, didn't it? But he back on that cycle that caused him depression. He's trying to lose his focus. He said, but God, remember, I've already told you, but I'm the only one serving you, and there's just not anybody left. And now that he's out of the cave, and now that he has been nourished, now he's going to restore his focus. And he said, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go appoint a king in Syria, and you're going to appoint a king, Jehu, in Israel. And you're going to go appoint your replacement. You see that bringing back to focus? Instead of saying, well, you're kind of depressed. And so, tell you what, I'll come back when you're not depressed. When you come out of the cave, I'll keep looking. And when you come out of the cave, then I'll come back and re-engage with you. He said, no, come out of the cave. Got to get something to eat. And even though he was trying to lose his focus again, he said, okay, heard your story. Got work for you to do. You see, God built that into His spiritual family. There's always work for us to do, isn't it? Now, if you and I would re-engage with each other and say, look, I'm not going to overburden you because maybe you're just trying to do too much. But there are some things you're really good at. You know, I'm going to visit folks and really need you to go with me. Well, I don't feel like it. Well, I know you don't feel like it, but come go with me anyway. Well, you know, I tell you what, we're going to go by and get something to eat. We're going to spend a little time together. But then we're going to go make some visits. Or, you know, we've got to mail out some correspondence courses and I really need somebody to help me. And, you know, sometimes we get a little overburdened and you can kind of help me with my burden and come go with me. Now, that involves us interacting with each other and that doesn't allow us to be invisible or ignore anybody else who wants to be invisible. Just can't allow that to happen. In this case, you see a loss of appetite with Elijah did not serve him well. God made us. He knew what would sustain us, and He gave it to us. And if we eat the right things in the right way, we'll have the energy we need. He had lost his energy. God knew that. Now, you didn't read that in a psychology book first. You read that in the Scriptures first. Now, you're going to pay a whole lot more for that psychology book than you're going to pay for the Bible. But the Bible has the answer. But you don't beat people over the head with it. You don't just quote Scripture to them and say, you're a Christian, you ought to get over it. Say, you know, the Bible has an example of someone who experienced life the way we did. A good man. In fact, a great man who did great things for the Lord. But he got a little overwhelmed. Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Boy, I do. What do you do when you're overwhelmed? Well, if your spiritual family is what it ought to be, we'll help each other. Do what we ought to do and accomplish those things. It doesn't matter what age we are. You see, anxiety and depression is no respecter of age. I counsel with young people who are very anxious. Cripples them sometimes. I counsel young people, unfortunately, who are depressed. They're just hopeless. Beautiful, attractive young people, very mentally bright, surrounded by people who love them, somewhere along the way, lost their focus, fatigued with life, refused to nourish themselves. So it has no respect to person. The old folks feel neglected and alone, and everything they've done in life may be unappreciated, and they just lie there in hopelessness. You and I could do something about that and say, guess what? Not going away. I'm back. And I'm going to keep coming back. I'm going to bring other people with me. And guess what? We've got a lot of young people at Graymere, and you're going to meet every one of them. They're coming with me. And so, what time of day is best for you? Well, you know, I don't do well in the morning. Well, I'll tell you what. Here's when we're coming. You see, sometimes young people think that they're all alone. Nobody cares. Across all age groups, people struggle with anxiety and depression. And when we say struggle, we're talking about wrestling with it. Really fight it. And they feel guilty. And they're afraid to tell us because they know the stigma involved. But if we understand it and realize some of the greatest servants of God experienced it, and God didn't give up on them. Aren't you glad He gave us a perfect example to follow? I can't tell you how exciting it was to me to be in secular classrooms listening to lectures of people who had discovered truth, and they thought it was their truth. It bolstered my faith to say, I know exactly where that truth came from. You didn't learn it there. You wasted a lot of time in life trying to find it. It's always been there. You see, unaddressed anxiety can lead to depression. And depression can lead to confusion and diminished faith. And that's where you and I usually recognize it. People who used to be active, no longer active. We say, you know, something's wrong with their faith. Well, that is true. But it was a process. They didn't just lose their faith. Their faith didn't just lessen. There's some experiences in life that cause that, just like Elijah. There's some circumstances that they felt like were beyond their control. They could do nothing about. And in their minds, they wrestle with that and they tried to bring understanding of that and they lost their focus of saying, well, I don't understand it, but God does. And that happens to me. How about you? I'm not a depressive kind of person. I'm one of 11 kids, and so I've always been surrounded by challenges and loving siblings and a mother who was just a saintly person and a wife who cares about me. And I just have lots of blessings in life, so I don't go around with a cloud over my head. But sometimes I get discouraged, extremely disappointed. My family has faced tragedy. We buried loved ones unexpectedly. And life just absolutely knocks the breath out of you. And you think, I cannot get up another time. What happens there? Lose their focus. What happens there? You're up day and night praying and working, hoping that grandchild will live. Doesn't. Now you're physically fatigued. You have no appetite. You haven't eaten. You're depressed. Life's not fair. And then when the fog clears, you look around and here's this waiting room filled with brothers and sisters in Christ. And they say, I don't know what to say. But we'll be here. And you doze off again in your stupor of depression, you open your eyes, they're still there. Maybe a different face, still your spiritual family. We're here. Isn't it a blessing to know that God provides such for us? Isn't it encouraging to know that if we keep our focus, if we make sure we keep balance in our life and we don't become fatigued and overextend ourselves. Elijah was finally told, there's 7,000 who've not yet bowed their knee to Baal. But that's how he saw it. When we really look around, look at how many of us there are. We're not alone, are we? We shouldn't feel like we're alone, and guess what? We need to make a pact tonight before we leave. And say, so I'm going to pay closer attention to my brothers and sisters. If I think they're struggling with some of these issues, if they're wrestling with those things, I'm not going to be intrusive. I'm not going to pronounce anything. I'm not going to make a diagnosis. But I'm going to keep tapping on the shoulder and keep them awake so they can refocus. I'm going to make sure they get the right kind of nourishment. I'm going to make sure they get busy again. I will not leave them alone. God did not leave Elijah alone. What did he do? He got up and went and appointed a king in Syria. He appointed a king in Israel. He went and selected Elisha. And wow, we know the rest of the story, don't we? This man goes out in a blaze of glory, doesn't he? He caught up in that chariot. And so we get to know the rest of the story. Where is he going in that chariot? He's going to be with his Father. You think focus is regained? Oh, yes. We're going to face things in life, and we're going to fall short. And we're going to just say, just leave me alone. It's all over. Let me die. Everything I thought was valuable, not sure anymore. God has provided us a spiritual family to say, no, not going to happen. I'm glad you jumped and not me. They warned me about that bell and said, maybe make you jump off of the pulpit. I had a little more focus than you did on that particular one. That's a loud bell. It has been a true pleasure to be with you. Not the kind of topic maybe some preachers would like to deal with, but God's already dealt with it, hadn't he? Aren't you glad he did? Aren't you glad the answers are so clear? Now, don't confuse it. There are occasions when everything we've just talked about are not going to make the depression go away. If it gets to that point, listen to me carefully. If you need to take medication, take it. And preachers, let's not become medical doctors or psychologists. Let's be caring, compassionate brothers and sisters in Christ. So we're here for you. Don't understand it all, but I may be where you are one of these days, and here's what I want you to do. Please never give up on me. Please keep waking me up. Please keep bringing me nourishment. Please keep refocusing me on what's really important. So that one day when the Lord comes back, we can leave the way Elijah did. With our hearts full of confidence. And with our soul inspired that we made it with His help. Thank you for allowing me to come and for your attentive nature this evening.